Are you achieving your goals at work and in your relationships and personal life? Personal accountability is the key. Mark Samuel is co-author of the book, The Power of Personal Accountability, Achieve What Matters to You. As president of Impact Corporation, Mark helps individuals and teams around the world overcome obstacles to reach new levels of fulfillment, excellence, and success. Visit www.marksamuel.com to learn about his accountability coaching services and products, or call 323-969-0088. MarkSamuel.com, success you can count on. 323-969-0088. Welcome again, Circles Change. It does not get any better than this, because welcome to the studio here live, Mark Samuel. How are you this morning?
Good. It's great to be here in warm Tucson.
Yeah, most of us call it hot, but you can call it warm.
Well, from L.A., it's warm.
Warm. There you go. Good point. Well, gosh, I want to cover at least 50 million subjects, but we can't. We got to stay on point. But I should start our segment. Of course, Mark's newest book just came out, Making Yourself Indispensable, The Power of Personal Accountability. And by the way, the reason he's here is I've hoodwinked him to partner with me for a big session on Monday with the leaders of Tucson Medical Center, as well as a couple sessions on Tuesday. And in fact, for those of you listening, we have a couple seats open. So send an email to change@thelarsongroup.com. Let us know why you'd be the right person for us to include, and we'll get you invited to that session Tuesday morning at the Lodge of Ventana Canyon, right?
Yes, and we'd love to see you there.
That's right. It'd be great. So again, change@thelarsongroup.com. Tell us why you'd like to join us, and we've got a couple seats available. Mark, of course, like I mentioned, his new book, we should also say, was just recently announced. It's the winner in the new business category for the International Book Awards. So what was that like to get that phone call?
Well, that was really exciting because... Well, first of all, I had forgotten that we had even
entered it. This is a good thing to forget, right? So you don't get anxious about it.
Yeah, exactly. But when we got the award, it was just very, very exciting that it was recognized that way.
So how lucky we are to catch you before all the other phone calls start coming and all the other tickets that are wanting to get booked to get you on the road further with your book. Well, I had jokingly said in the show intro that I was going to call this segment Mayday, Mayday, Are We Sinking or Just Taking on a Little Water? And you and I, you know, we've done over 80 segments now in these 3 years, but one subject for whatever reason we've overlooked is talking about radical change in companies versus continuous improvement, and in some regards how continuous improvement needs to have radical to spur it, or sometimes when you get into radical, you know, whoops, we should have done continuous. So here we go.
And it's really easy to confuse, because when there's a Mayday situation, if you will, there's a lot of emotional energy that goes into it.
No kidding.
And it gets our attention, but that doesn't mean it requires a major change. It may just be an emotional trigger that's surfacing that we now have to deal with. And that, to me, is one of the ways that organizations get off track, because they get focused on the emotional issues that are showing up now and actually forget about the direction they're going into. And you don't really know whether it requires a major change unless you're thinking in terms of where you're going, not what's happening now.
And in fact, you've often said this idea of when you're going across the country and it's dark, you aren't concerned that your headlights don't go beyond the first 100 feet in front of you, right? So it's still taking those continuous steps to get you there.
That's right. And so you want that continuous improvement effort so that you can handle those emotional charged breakdowns that take place and hopefully actually minimize those. But you also want to be going in terms of a major direction. Now, if your major direction that you're going into requires a huge shift for your organization or for yourself personally, that's when you want to really look at, what do I need to do significantly differently in the way I'm approaching my life, my organization, my customers, whatever the topic is that you're making the major shift in. You want that to be your guide for, oh, we need to really change things up here.
You know, many of us, though, who've led change efforts, some leaders will tell you, look, I'm not cut out to do the continuous improvement stuff. I like the high-focused, big energy, almost thrill-seeking, big change initiatives. So what can happen is you can be in the midst of one of those and realize, wait a minute, I might not be equipped as well, and I need to surround myself with some people who don't mind going slow, taking more data, etc., the incremental shifting.
Well, as we both know, leadership is a game of and, not a game of or.
Right.
And so it's not one or the other, it's actually we need sometimes those major shifts to really change things up. And then after that, we need to go back to our continuous improvement to keep refining, modifying, and learning from experience. Because that's really what, to me, continuous improvement is about. It's in the constant game of learning from our experience and modifying, etc. What, to me, the big change is about is saying, boy, we need to have a completely different impact.
A different impact, okay.
Than we've had in the past. How do we create that?
So it isn't necessarily a different approach, but it's a different impact that'll pull you there.
Yes, and that can come from a new service delivery model. It can come from a new business model. It could come from a new customer base. It can come from a major change in the economy. All of those things are, it's the external drivers around us that create the reason to make a significant change.
You know, I was part of a company that I remember walking in, and the firm I'd left before, it was a classic situation where you knew every Friday afternoon if your phone rang at 4:30, you really wanted to question where you pick up the phone, because invariably was some tactical, something went upside down that you were going to have to focus on it all weekend long. And fine, it comes with the lay of the land, particularly when you're in technical organizations and manufacturing and the like. But what it struck me is when I joined this company was my first phone call on Monday was that. And it became a clear indication that the company actually enjoyed the crisis management, the emotional things to get everybody's blood moving.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And that I felt that's no way you need to be really trying to move a ship in a new direction. But I came to realize they liked doing the technical stuff.
Well, I do think there's organizations that I work with, most of them, in fact, are actually attracted to crisis because it's in those crises that people actually work well together.
Good point.
When there's no crisis, everyone goes back to their silos and their autonomous, you know, ways of doing things. And quite honestly, that spurs the blame game and spurs people going off in fragmented directions. And it's that crisis that says, oh my gosh, I have to put my ego aside and my own issues aside to now work together. And so
one might say that those of us that are effective in leading change, because I'm guilty as charged with what I'm about to say, is you have to know how to be the master of the flare, to shoot those kind of packaged crises a little bit, or these emotionally charged things, to get people to realize that power of collaboration.
Yeah, it's how do we create a sense of urgency without crisis,
and
how do we keep things moving, and how do we keep the direction and knowledge of the external drivers, because the external drivers are constantly changing around us, and the problem is I oftentimes see senior management kind of working with them, but they don't actually share those. And they share the change in response to the external drivers, but everyone then thinks that the change is fragmented and just the desire of senior management, when in fact it's really a response to the external drivers. And I'm always telling, you know, managers, you need to be sharing the external drivers to keep things alive for people.
Boy, you are right on the money. I was with a client this week, and that's exactly what he was saying. In his past life, takes to more like at a divisional section here in Southern Arizona, they knew they could count on going to the corporate offices for that which they needed help with. But recently things have reshaped, so it wasn't more of how can they help us, but what are they going to now do to us? Mm-hmm. And it came down to are they explaining the bigger strategy to you?
Yeah, and the external drivers is, again, what dictates, do we need that major change or do we just need continuous improvement?
Right.
And when there's major change, it's the external drivers that is really the influence to get people to support it. It is not your selling of the change. And, you know, I actually saw this once at working with Honda, where people were actually so resistant to change for literally 3 months, they brought me in to do a quote-unquote change management course. And, of course, I knew that wasn't really the answer. I started the program with identifying external drivers and what the impact would be. And then identifying what changes they were being asked to that they were resistant, and just showed them both lists where they could see the change effort and the external drivers, and then they just started giggling. And they said, oh, we get it. Our change efforts are to respond to those external drivers, which if we don't respond to, we're going to go out of business, lose our jobs. Okay, can we just cancel the change management course and just start planning these changes?
Which is good news.
Literally in 45 minutes, the whole thing was resolved, and there was no resistance because they understood the external drivers.
Okay, so for our listeners, let's think about that in our own personal context. cite an example, either someone you've coached or a situation where you haven't, or you know someone who hasn't really thought through the external drivers that could help them then take steps in the right direction.
Well, for me, it happens even in my own life because, you know, I always deal with weight issues. Now, when I'm just gaining a little few pounds here and there and whatever, it's uncomfortable. It's one thing. And then all of a sudden when A, I don't fit into my clothes, and B, my health starts to go down and I can't sleep it as well and I'm overly stressed, it's like, hey, I need a major course correction here and I need to relook at it differently. And I think, again, that's one of the big external drivers in all of our lives. It's our health. It's our financial situation. Mm-hmm. It's our relationships. And at sometimes, you know, we get enough pain that we go, we have to do a major do differently. And I need to actually stop, not just go on the next diet, not just, you know, improve my communication a little bit with my relationships.
These are all in our previous term, that's the continuous improvement things that are necessary but not sufficient.
Exactly. And I have to really look and stop and do a, you know, to me, life planning, if you will. At least that's what I do for myself. And because it's a wake-up call. It says, wow, this is too painful. I need to reapproach how I'm even doing my life.
Right. I've spent time on Friday night, almost 3 hours, with a young client in Los Angeles who has just relocated from overseas, doing all the right things on the surface about networking and finding a new job and getting established, but she has been getting her place into a place of being frozen to the point that now she's depleted her resources, the angst has sent him to, and even when I took her through the process of recrafting her resume, it was almost too much for her to do because she's felt like that I've wasted all this other effort. I'm stripping myself down to the bare bones. And I say, yep, we probably are, but recognize history is going to repeat itself. You've been successful in the past. Look at all these other, you know, so this whole idea of reframing and looking at the bigger outcome desire.
Yes, and it's so important to do that in as relaxed a space as possible. So, you know, a lot of times that's what's difficult because we're trying to just survive, you know, but at some point, we got to kind of just stop, take a breath, and now say, okay, how would I do this differently?
And that, of course, is one of our challenges when we work with organizations, is to step in and get people to take a breath, get them to giggle and play, and also realize all the elements you call that are the human condition, which is we will make mistakes. We do have to have recovery plans. You know?
And we can't always do it ourselves because we're in the weeds. Yeah. And that's when it's really critical to have a coach, to have a mentor, to have a consultant, whatever it is that's outside of you, because you can't see yourself. And I have to do that for myself. I can't coach myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking at who around me can give me coaching from an objective, non-biased viewpoint, because they're not so embedded in the problem in the situation.
Which, of course, is one of the powers of then journaling and writing out your emotions, because in some ways it's your subconscious that can talk to you. So if you pick up the book 2 days from now and say, oh, I should be listening to myself. But it's hard to do that.
Absolutely. And that is one of the things you can do for yourself. That journaling is a good idea. There's a technique that we call free-form writing, which is just writing whatever is, you know, you're emotionally feeling without any
judgment.
Any judgment and any even review of it. Like once I write it, I burn it. Mm-hmm. So it's just a release of emotional energy, and you do that for about 10 minutes and or longer until you feel clear again. I had to do that just the other day, in fact, because I was just so overwhelmed with, you know, my problem, if you would, that I was paralyzed.
Well, and it isn't just writing. It can be drawing.
It can be
raking leaves, shoveling snow, cleaning the garage. I mean, it can be some of those physical activities that get you out of your head.
Yes, and these are all techniques, again, whether it's a physical activity, writing, artwork, whatever it is, that gets you to a free space that then once you're at the free space, don't go out back to what you were doing.
That's true.
Take the time to explore, where do I want to be? What significant changes do I want to make in my life? And what's the support system for me to make it?
Right. Mark, we probably have leaders of leaders that are tuning in right now or listening to our podcast afterwards. Thanks for being with us. this idea that some of my leaders might be better equipped to lead a continuous improvement type activity vis-a-vis the ones that really can take the hit and shoulder the radical stuff. I do believe we need to be mindful on selecting those talented people, don't you think?
Absolutely. And the way I look at it is, while I say it's a game of and, we want to develop both skills, but there are going to be those natural leaders that, for continuous improvement, and those natural leaders to lead a major change effort. And utilizing our resources for what people's gifts are is so important. So you want to develop in areas that are not your gift, but you always, as a leader of leaders, need to understand, you know, where are my gifts in the people I'm leading?
Well, I know you love statistics. You've been a natural statistics and math, and so using data to drive decisions. I'm sure you, in the past, perhaps found yourself in circumstances where people around you are saying, Mark, look, we don't have time to get wallowing in the data. Let's just get on with it. So some of that challenge is not just to recognize our skills, but also realize the context in which we're in and how do we appropriately let them shine to help?
Yes. In fact, I really use data mostly for that continuous improvement change. I generally don't use data for the massive change. So it's, I'm using direction and vision for the massive change. Mm-hmm. And then once we're into it, we'll use data to modify.
Okay. Although, to get people's attention on understanding, are these external drivers real or not real? There's nothing like having good data that shows. Do you realize your market share has just dropped from 25 to 9% in 2 years?
Yes, it's an attention getter, and that's really important. It's credibility.
Or, like you were saying, back to a personal situation of weight management or tracking the amount of hours of our sleep or not being able to sleep, that sometimes we don't see our own data in front of us.
Yeah, but the problem then becomes, if I go after the data, then I may not change all the habits that include the lifestyle to support it. That's what I see organizations doing. They'll go after that number and not realize that the culture needs to change because the culture represents its habits. And so we might accomplish the goal and then undermine ourselves because we can't sustain it.
Ooh. That sounds dicey, because this is a world where IT systems and data management dashboards, metrics, but you can absolutely miss the forest from the trees.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why I don't...
It's on the weed thing you're saying.
Yes, and that's why I don't use numbers to create a big change. I might use it to stimulate the reason for the change, but I get people off the numbers as soon as I can because I need to have them picture what they would be doing different and the habits to support it.
And so that all goes back to what that relationship would feel like with your spouse that you otherwise have been having your challenges. Well, you'd picture that you both could enjoy a dinner out together, or that you would compliment one another more when you went and exercised or whatever.
Yes, and then it's taking that picture and turning it into a habit.
And a habit.
So how do we repeatedly do that over and over until we get it embedded, because it's going to be new and we'll otherwise go back to an old habit and recreate the old metric?
Ooh, yeah, and I think we've talked about that, of the creation of new habits. It requires repetition. It requires acknowledgement, you know, also having recovery plans. If you might have slipped off it, you know, I still went for that Snickers bar at 2 o'clock at least once this week.
Well, we have to understand that the habit isn't just a physical habit. Like, I've just discovered recently I have a mental habit that causes me to overeat. So I'll start thinking about things like, oh, boy, I wish I could eat that candy. I wish I could have that piece of cake. Well, that all of a sudden is saying I'm already attached to it. It's now just a matter of time
before
I'll act on
cake.
It.
Or the cake is going to come to you.
I have to stop the mental habit.
Got it. Interesting. Well, good. Well, Mark, here we are already closing and wrapping up our time. Again, my guest, my colleague, my partner, Mark Samuel. For our listeners, it's www.marksamuel.com. His new book is Making Yourself Indispensable, The Power of Personal Accountability. It's his fourth book, by the way, so others you can observe and be mindful of on his site. Again, for listeners here in Tucson, we're going to have two spots open for Tuesday morning, 9 to 11, at the Lodge at Ventana Canyon. Send an email to change@thelarsengroup.com. We'll happen to see if you might be one of the two that we'd like to extend the invitation to. And again, Mark, winner of the new business book category for the International Book Awards. How timely. And enjoy that glow as long as you can, right?
Well, thank you so much. And it's so wonderful to actually do this live and in concert with you.
Although we did have a challenge because I know your wife, Kameen, is with us. And she said, this is going to be hard because Mark usually, when he does the interview, is on the cell phone pacing all around our home. And you managed to sit still still for 25 minutes, right? And now I know that you're going to be like a spinning top walking around. Again, Mark Samuel, real pleasure. Thank you so much for your contributions to our show, our extending out and helping others in the process and circles of change.
Well, thanks, Sarah.
Great.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays 10 to noon right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.